Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and I'm here with the Lord of the Trolls, Dominic Vietti. Dominic, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Austin. Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. Now, see, you would not necessarily be somebody that would come up on people's radar, perhaps as the type of guest that most people would want to interview on a political talk show, but you have sort of inserted yourself into the political debate by trolling every single libertarian you can, and by, poking fun at people, calling them names. And it's not the type of thing that most libertarians would say, oh, well, we should engage with this guy, but you and I have carved out a bit of a friendship, you might say, even though we sort of have different viewpoints, and I would say maybe you probably don't like libertarians. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. Okay. If I didn't like libertarians, I wouldn't have any friends on Facebook, that's for sure.
Okay, so maybe your interaction with libertarians has sort of like changed your viewpoints a little bit. Is that the case?
Depends on the libertarian.
Okay, well, here's my question. Now, I have to start this out with the obvious question. Why do you hate freedom?
The same reason Ron Paul hates America.
Oh, no! Don't say that. You're going to get us all murdered. You saw that guy. He was like, said he was going to laugh that I was going to get murdered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I fully expect, I expect the flaming dog poop on my front porch here within the hour.
All right. Well, all jokes aside, no jokes aside, we should joke a lot during this show. But I do want to talk to you about sort of your experience kind of coming in contact with the libertarian movement. I mean, would you classify yourself as a neocon? Is it safe to say, you kind of come from the sort of more interventionist George Bush style of foreign policy kind of thing, traditional republicanism?
I've never liked the term, but I've learned to embrace it for purposes of discussion. So sure. Yeah, we can run with that.
Okay. Well, all right. So, this is when the libertarians go, rah, and they're going to kill the guy, because, Ron Paul sort of declared war on the neocons. And I have done so myself, because I feel as if, when you look at like the national debt of the United States and you see how much we spend on military expenditures, we send tanks and cash to Egypt that goes to the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're funding these terrorists, like the ISIS terrorists in Syria, and then they go and they're taking over Iraq, and they're sort of thwarting our progress in creating a democratic state there. Doesn't that kind of go against the ideals of spreading democracy there? What I'm asking you, Dominic, is, isn't there an argument for non-intervention sometimes?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are times when the interventions aren't necessarily thought out very well, or simply things don't go the way you hope they do. Certainly there's a time when maybe you should keep your hands out of that mess. It depends on the situation.
Okay, yeah. So, is that just how it is? So you don't say sort of like, yeah, we need to be everywhere all the time, even though you've kind of alluded to that. But you just try and take things on a case-by-case basis on whether or not you should be involved. Doesn't that sort of create an inconsistent type of foreign policy like the one we have right now?
Perhaps, but my response to that is always the world's not consistent. Mm-hmm. You can't always apply consistent principles. What may have been a good idea yesterday may not be a good idea today.
But conservatives are always railing against moral relativism. They're saying if there's a moral principle, if something's wrong, then it's always wrong. If something's right, then it's always right. So do you sort of reject that then?
In terms of foreign policy, sure. There are people who we may support who probably don't really reflect American values. Mm-hmm. But they have the advantage of not being anti-American in their leadership. Mm-hmm. So you might see the United States backing someone like a Syngman Rhee in South Korea, for all practical purposes, a dictator, but a pro-American dictator who stood in the way of North Korea. Mm-hmm. So is it consistent? Not 100%, no. But is it practical? Sure.
Okay. You don't totally reject non-interventionism. You just say, oh, it's on a case-by-case basis. But, I mean, I guess you sort of see Ron Paul's, you know, foreign policy as impractical, but it's more of an ideal. I guess it's an idealist, you know. Like, the ideal was that we would be able to say, like what George Washington said, you know, that we would have peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations and entangling alliances with none. And the idea was that the United States, I know you don't like this idea, but the United States could be a shining beacon of freedom and that we wouldn't be involved in the wars of Europe. You know, that when they went to war with one another, it wasn't necessarily, you know, we wouldn't necessarily be involved in every single war. But you kind of like say, oh, no, we need to protect Poland and we need to protect Britain and stuff like that. Even if they go and get all involved in some skirmish that doesn't have anything to do with this, like the Falklands War in Argentina or something.
Well, and that was one we didn't really get involved with. Mm-hmm.
Thatcher begged us to, you know.
You just asked if I hated freedom, basically.
Yeah, that's true. That's
you're back to the original point.
Yeah.
How you intervene and where you intervene, you know, Washington said that. Mm-hmm. But Washington himself, our nation, is the product of an entangling alliance with France. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
you had to bring that up, didn't you? The French.
The founders said things that they themselves didn't necessarily apply when they governed. So.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I want to talk about Ron Paul and I want to talk about Rand Paul. I want to separate the two and then I kind of talk about them. You know, Ron Paul is a person who got me involved in politics, and you sort of beat up on Ron Paul all the time, and I sort of admire him, and now I'm being crucified by his supporters because I betrayed him three times. Once was when I betrayed 9/11 Truth. Two, when I suggested that vaccines don't cause autism, and the third time when I actually suggested that he might be human. I mean, what do you think is the problem with Ron Paul supporters, and what do you think is the problem with Ron Paul himself?
Oh, where do you start? Mm-hmm. First of all, you betrayed him three times, so you know you get the keys to the asylum when it's time. Mm-hmm. Where he's gone sometimes in your podcast where you said he tends to blame the United States. Mm-hmm. He does do that. Mm-hmm. He attracts a lot of young people. Trust me, you're not the first person to say, you know, Ron Paul got me into politics. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul gets other people into politics too. Mm-hmm. Crazy people. Mm-hmm. Nazis, anti-Semites, truthers, mm-hmm. Yeah, anti-vaxxers, enemies, all sorts of people across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. So do Democrats, you know. I mean, but go ahead.
But what I've always admired about you is that you have always rejected those people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And part of it has to do with, like, you know, I'm very much an idealist. And I remember being in 2008 in New York City and having thousands of young people surrounding me and being very excited about Ron Paul's campaign and all the money that we were able to raise. You know, there was this grassroots action. It was this radical movement. And yes, we were fringe, but there was something very exciting about being a part of a movement of people. Are you there? Dominic?
Right there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. The Illuminati took out our transmission. 1776 will commence if this happens again.
Yeah, you knew something like that had to go down.
Well, while we're doing our interview, ladies and gentlemen, the power in my studio actually went out. But thankfully, we had a backup transmission. We had our Berkey water filters, and everything was okay. We're saved. All right.
Good thing you got that bunker.
Good thing I've got my Glenn Beck bunker survival backpack ready to go. Okay, so that's what we were talking about. We were talking about the type of people that Ron Paul attracts. And, you know, I was telling this story about how in New York City, you know, I was surrounded by these people who were all very excited about coming together for a political movement that was very genuine. Until I started to, you know, get to know some of these people, and it wasn't until I realized that, you know, they weren't all kind of like me, you know, and that's okay, you know, diverse movements bring together diverse people, and not everybody's, you know, a conspiracy crazy person, but some people were crazy, you know, chemtrail nuts. And then I met a guy who was a Nazi. And when I say a Nazi, Dominic, I'm talking about a real motherfucking Nazi here, you know?
Why you told the story?
Yeah, you've read that story. And this wasn't a guy that was just like some greasy-haired, you know, Sieg Heil, you know, skinhead. You know, this is a beautiful blonde Aryan with his Catholic girlfriend, and these are like, you know, kill the Jews Nazis, you know? And so it kind of woke me up to some of the problems. And, you know, the thing is that, like, Ron Paul can't necessarily be blamed for that directly, you know? And I know that you sort of do. You do kind of say, oh, it's sort of a dog whistle that Ron Paul says. Go ahead, say it. Say it. You think he does.
Ron does nothing to discourage it.
Okay.
And far from it, you know, there are some things that Ron does that, of course, you know, later he says, gee, I don't know who wrote that had my name and face all over it.
Not the newsletters.
Newsletters. And the Ron Paul Institute is just plain nuts.
Those people are kooks.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at what they did in the last week, it was almost everything Vladimir Putin would have asked them to do, with a sprinkling of some flack for Hamas, and then they took time to denounce you in a single article.
I know.
Now, I'm sure Ron will say, gee, I know nothing about that. But
he probably doesn't. And that's the thing, is it almost feels like he's very incompetent about who he chooses to work for him, because so many of these people, you know, he says, I don't know. It's like, what are you doing, Ron? Like, aren't you managing the people who are writing for you? You know, I certainly read everything that the people who publish on my websites write, you know. But it is a problem, because, you know, I can't change the fact that I have my beliefs that are libertarian beliefs, Dominic, and I'm not going to be run off by a group of crazy people who want to try and play, you know, purity holier than thou. And so just because I'm unfortunate enough to have a whole lot of crazy people who share my beliefs, I can't change that. You know, I've modified my viewpoints on certain things, and, you know, I was never a pacifist. But I think that a lot of these people are. I think that a lot of these people are pacifists. They call themselves libertarians who believe in self-defense, but they're more willing to sort of stand up for dictators when they think it means that we're not going to go to war. Well, even like neocon Lindsey Graham, John McCain warmongers, you know, who maybe they do want war with Russia, I feel like they aren't even taking that seriously. You know what I mean? Like the threat with Russia is really not a big threat. You know, nobody really wants war with Russia. I mean, even John McCain and Lindsey Graham might say they do, but I feel like it's more of a sort of campaign slogan for them. But it's like, you know, it's almost like these nuts at the Ron Paul Institute, like they want to take the side of Putin just to almost like hipster libertarianism, just to be like cool almost, you know?
Yeah, their pacifism is very one-sided. I didn't see any articles on RPI last week asking them, asking for a de-escalation, saying, or even saying, you know, what's going on is terrible, it's not our business.
Right.
Ron Paul came out and said, you know, why not partition Ukraine? Well, you know, Ron, if it's not your business, maybe you ought not be writing up partition plans.
That's a really good point. Like, that's what I never understood, was that is this whole idea that libertarians say, oh, well, this is none of my business, it's none of my business, until, oh, free Gaza, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, oh, really, it's none of our business, and unless it's the side that you know, it's something that you agree with, right?
Exactly.
It's okay if you have distractions in the background. Everybody knows you're a normal person, and you're not John Bolton, who has like an army of attendants waiting outside. Which you should feel happy, because you know you're on the same podcast that the illustrious ambassador John Bolton, I'm sure you love him, was on the same show.
I am a big John Bolton fan. surprised that they haven't gotten him though. You said that he self-identified as a libertarian, and I'm sure that the High Council has shot that down.
Well, that's because on other issues, and again, I want to move on here in just a minute. On other issues, Ambassador John Bolton, you know, might be more libertarian on, except for the weird thing, you're talking about the war on drugs, and I just want to touch on this for a second, because you know, I'm sure you probably have the standard, you know, conservative, you know, BS views on that.
But
don't lend too much credibility to me.
Yeah. Well, John Bolton was like, you know, no, we need to step up spending on fighting the cartels in Mexico, you know, stopping them at the border and stopping the drugs from getting in, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, like, that's not libertarian, you know, like it's pretty standard libertarian that the de-escalation of the war on drugs and more decriminalization and legalization will lead to less crime and better outcomes for people who are addicted to drugs, to illegal drugs. And so you understand the standard libertarian talking point too, that, you know, we don't condone drug use necessarily. Maybe some libertarians do, but, you know, just because you do something stupid doesn't mean that you should have to sit rot in jail for it and all of that. What do you think about that argument? Are you a libertarian in any sense in that way?
My feeling on legalization is that you do it with a very fine tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
Drug involved people don't do drugs in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to commit a lot of other crime, mm-hmm, in the pursuit and use of drugs.
They drink alcohol too.
That's true.
And they smoke cigarettes.
If my house is on fire, should I dump gasoline on it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an argument to be made. Well, if we have a problem with this, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't add to it. Mm-hmm.
But as far as the government being involved,
something. Yeah, there's worse things than decriminalizing pot in the world. You know, I don't know how big a problem that would be.
Do you consider yourself a constitutionalist?
No, I don't get into it that deep, I guess.
We should just keep this to trolling, okay? Not get into these deep in the subjects.
The Constitution when it suits me.
I guess, yeah, like everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I was just going to make the point that, you know, they had to have a constitutional amendment to ban alcohol, but for some reason they didn't for drugs, you know. But anyways, I want to talk about Rand Paul for a second. You know, you've sort of been, you know, kind of hard on Rand Paul too. I mean,
He's quite
a different from his father, which the Ron Paulians sort of hate Rand for that.
Yeah, no, and I think he's a much better candidate than his father was, and I supported him when he ran for Senate. He's just across the river from me here in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I like Rand Paul generally. I think as a presidential candidate, he's got a few flaws.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm sure was probably a mistaken statement on the Civil Rights Act.
Oh, yeah.
The press will staple that to his head and beat him to death with it.
Yeah, he rescinded that just this last week at the Urban League conference.
I know he did. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's putting They'll toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Good point.
The other thing that I would be a little concerned about if he were to run for president.
Speaking as a neocon, go ahead.
No, not as a neocon, just as a political observer. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a lot of experience in politics, in government, which can be a good thing. And he doesn't have much experience as executive. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in the off White House right now.
Sure.
Not saying that you need to have a ton of government under your belt. Not that that's a good thing, but you do have to know how the government works.
Right.
And if you want to run the country, you have to know how to run things.
That's true.
And those are two things that...
He was a doctor, though. I mean, that's sort of an interesting, you know, profession to come from.
It's an interesting background.
I mean, wouldn't you say, like, you know, maybe it's time that we need some healing for this country?
If I were trying to come up with a catchy slogan, I certainly would. I don't know. We haven't had a lot of doctor presidents, though. I don't know that necessarily is a professional... plus for him, mm-hmm, in politics, but
we got to dismantle Obamacare as quickly as we can, of course.
Well, and that's something that a lot of Republicans have done in the past, particularly in '94. Several Republicans, doctors, ran for the Congress and Senate, running against Bill Clinton's health care plan. And Rand Paul could certainly use, if he wants to try and untie the knot of Obamacare, uh-huh, could use his healthcare background to do that, uh-huh, at least in the campaign.
Uh-huh.
So he's light years ahead of where his dad is.
Uh-huh.
He's got some weak spots, too.
You've given libertarians a lot of crap about this idea that there's this blanket right of privacy
in the Constitution. You know, we talk about the Fourth Amendment. We talk about the NSA spying and wiretapping. And you're sort of like, this blanket right of privacy doesn't exist. But I mean, let me ask you just directly, do you think that the government should have to have a warrant in order to listen to our phone calls?
Yes. Okay. I do.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a direct question and a direct answer. So, I mean, so why do you sort of give people like Congressman Justin Amash such a hard time when they go out to try and push for those types of constitutional guarantees?
Well, the NSA thing, which I think is what you're probably getting at, my understanding of that is they can't actually listen to anything they record without a warrant. So, is that a technicality to get around the Fourth Amendment? Maybe.
Right.
I have other problems with Amash. That's probably one of the smaller ones. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of a blanket right to privacy, I don't even think it comes into the ethos of American politics until about 1890. You don't hear that phrase before then. And if you're a constitutionalist, you know, if you read the Fourth Amendment as it is.
Persons, places, papers, and effects.
Yeah.
That's fairly broad.
Fairly broad, yeah. True. It's not entirely, it's...
You're a shill for the government, Dominic. You're trying to find an excuse to give the government more power to get into our freaking bedrooms, listen to my phone calls when I'm doing sexy time on the phone call with my girlfriend. They're passing around naked pictures of us, Dominic. That's the thing, is that you say they're not listening to phone calls, but the headlines come out and the NSA takes naked photos, they intercept this data, they intercept our emails. I mean, don't you see why people like myself are outraged? You know, I worry about that kind of stuff because, not because I want to run for office someday, because that's sure as shit, but it's sure as hell.
All naked photos out there.
Well, not my naked photos, but I've said enough mean stuff to enough people that I'm sure there'll be a bullet in the back of my head if I ever try to run. The thing is, Dominic, is that, like, you know, just as a normal person, you know, which I'm not totally normal, but normal enough-ish, you know, yes. you got inspired and activated because I worry about big government overreach, and you as a conservative, you know, worried about big government, doesn't it trouble you when you see things like that, that they take our naked pictures, that they look at them, you know, like, wouldn't that bother you?
Oh, well, of course, and my thought on that is, there will be abuse of anything. That doesn't necessarily mean we shouldn't have it. You know, as I read sometimes on the internet, I understand police sometimes shoot dogs.
Quite a bit, actually.
That doesn't make me want to just ban the police. I wish they would stop shooting dogs. I don't want the NSA circulating your nude photos and your emails.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I want the NSA abolished. Because I think we need a national security apparatus.
Well, what's the point of an NSA if we already have a CIA? It seems, and we've got a Department of Homeland Security. All of these redundant offices, Dominic. Why can't we just lump everything together, roll it into the Department of Defense, and just call it a day? Why do we have to have all these multiple redundancies?
I think to some extent you're right. The original purpose of the CIA was to collect all the intelligence from all the agencies that were coming together, and they weren't putting intelligence together. And then when they missed 9/11, they created
the
National Intelligence Director, who does supposedly what the CIA is supposed to do with all of its intelligence. Yeah, I mean, you could roll a lot of that up into one department, but you know how the government is.
Because, again, isn't this about national defense? Isn't that what it's all about? And if it's national defense, it should be in the Department of Defense.
To an extent. But the Defense Department's intelligence is going to be different than what the State Department is looking at.
Right.
So you can make a case for having defense and state, and then also... If you're not going to allow the CIA to operate within the borders of the United States, then you need something domestically.
Which we shouldn't allow the CIA to operate within the borders of the United States.
I don't trust those shady mother
FBI or whatever.
Yeah.
To do that.
Why? Because that's the thing, is that we already have an FBI, you know, like interstate crime. I just don't understand why we have to continue to build all of these redundant bureaucracies on bureaucracy and bureaucracy. This is how you go broke. You know, this is how a state eventually crumbles, which, you know, maybe a lot of anarcho-capitalists would be happy with. But, you know, you said once something that really stuck with me, and I guess it sort of confused me when you said it, but I'd like you to clarify. You said that you supported Jeffersonian liberty, but not what the Libertarian Party cooked up in the 1970s. Can you tell me what's Jeffersonian liberty to you? What does that mean?
That would be the what the Constitution states. I mean, it's the very idea of American liberty. Mm-hmm. The stuff that came with the Libertarian Party in the 70s, I don't know. Should we starve our children? Murray Rothbard says, I can. But I don't know that that's really a sound policy.
You had to bring up the one damn thing that I do agree with you on. You know, I've lost some friends, some like real close friends, over an argument about that, because they were very sincerely arguing that there should not be a law against leaving your children to starve to death. And the reason is because, they say, because it's not going to stop people from starving their children. So they're just, it should not be illegal, you know, and they're not committing an aggression. You know, these sort of cuckoo idea, they say that the non-aggression principle is the end all be all to libertarianism. And I actually don't agree with that. I think that there's problems with the non-aggression principle. Most of it, it's not even the theory, it's the practice. I mean, there are some problems with the theory, but in practice, it absolutely does not work, because the non-aggression principle implies that there is never an argument against for a preemptive strike. This is something that people were just going for my balls yesterday. They were saying, how dare you suggest that there's ever a moral argument for preemptive strike? I posted a meme of Han Solo, right? And I made the joke, you know, I was like, and he proved that there's an argument for preemptive strike because he shot first. He shot Greedo, right? And they're like, you're a neocon, Austin. And I had to laugh because, you know, they don't understand what self-defense is. I mean, they've never been in a fight, or they've gotten their ass kicked so many times that they're just like, well, I'll just bend over and take it. You know, when I was getting bullied as a kid, I got hit a couple of times until I realized when a bully hits you a couple of times, you wait and you see when they're going to come up behind you, and then you do a little donkey kick when they come back at you, you know, right before they can do it.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing for the George Bush foreign policy of bomb everywhere or Donald Rumsfeld's ready, fire, aim. You know, I think that that's reckless and wrong. But again, I think that libertarians are somewhat naive on foreign policy, and that these problems have to be addressed. You know, I just want to rant just one more second about one major issue that I brought up. I was actually invited to speak at a Young Americans for Liberty conference. Probably never again now after I criticized Ron Paul. But last year, I gave a speech on foreign policy at a Young Americans for Liberty conference, and I posed a question to the audience. And I said, okay, pop quiz, hot shots. I said, pop quiz, anarcho hot shots. I go, you just had terrorists bomb your marathon. I said, terrorists have just bombed, and the Boston bombing had just happened. I said, separatists have just bombed your marathon. I go, and you have got to capture these terrorists. I go, you've got two options. You can hire Blackwater, and you can send mercenaries to go attack them, or you can send in SEAL Team 6. And I'd like a show of hands, and I asked the audience, I said, so students, tell me, which do you prefer, Blackwater, private mercenaries, or SEAL Team 6? And you know what happened, Dominic? Half the audience said Blackwater, half the audience said SEAL Team 6. And that just goes to show that there is incongruency in the liberty movement. They don't even know what their foreign policy is. So what do you think about that? And what do you think about the idea of using mercenaries to go and take care of terrorism, a more free market way of doing things?
I think there's problems with that.
Blackwater.
Blackwater had some problems when they operated in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Also, you don't really know for sure what you're going to get when you hire mercenaries. Mm-hmm. You might get Blackwater, you might get worse. When you employ your own professional military. Mm-hmm. And the SEALs, your dad was Special Forces, they're the top trained men in the world. Mm-hmm. They work for you. They're working for not just you and your money, they're working for their country. Mm-hmm.
That's what I said in that speech, yeah.
Yeah, if you start hiring foreign mercenaries, which is something Jefferson tried to do in Tripoli, mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of putted around in the desert for a while, and I don't think they ever got anywhere near Tripoli.
Right. The French Foreign Legion, though, they do a pretty darn good job.
But that's a military unit.
That's true.
It's comprised of foreign criminals, mm-hmm. largely, mm-hmm. but it's part of the French army.
That's true. Well, yeah, you know, and the thing is that some people, like, they sort of say, they don't give Ron Paul credit for that, because I think that it's a worthwhile solution to discuss. You know, he proposed that after 9/11 to go after bin Laden, you know, and instead of spending, you know, 10 years and, you know, again, acting like those mercenaries did, pissing around in the desert for a decade, you know, they could have perhaps sent Blackwater in to immediately murder Osama bin Laden and his associates. But again, you know, like... The problem is that when you look at things that are going on overseas right now, it always just seems like an excuse to expand government, that the stated purposes, Dominic, are to keep America safe, but that what happens is the opposite, that the intervention in these countries always comes back to bite us in the ass. And I won't use the word blowback, because I know that's when you start going KKK kooky anti-Semites. But, you know, I think I
prefer the term cause and effect, but if you like,
cause and effect. And, you know, again, I got raked over the coals for admitting that there are some people who do hate us for our freedoms. That is absolutely true, you know, and most libertarians who are ignorant on foreign policy, who haven't read some of these suicide bombers and their manifestos for why they attack us, they don't want to admit that the reality is that some people do hate you because you're better than them. You've got a more liberalized culture, and they're jealous of your freedom and of your wealth. And that is a true story. And, you know, I got haters every single day trying to blow me up. But if I can admit that, Dominic, can't you admit that sometimes the interventions that we get into overseas will come back to harm us?
Sure. Especially when they aren't very well thought out. Mm-hmm. You're seeing that in Libya right now.
You say very well thought out, but I mean, your government's stupid, Dominic. I mean, like, shouldn't the argument be on the less trusting side rather than that? Well, you know, yeah, they screwed that one up. I screwed that one up. They screwed the next one up. So shouldn't it always be on a more conservative approach?
Yes, but you can look at things that have been very successful. Uh-huh. You know, why is Western Europe stable? The United States intervened. Uh-huh. Why is Japan stable?
But we got blown up. Remember, they started it. This wasn't like, you know, like Libya or some crap where we're just like, oh, we're going to have a UN
resolution. Well, I think Ron Paul would say that we provoked the Japanese.
Oh, don't school.
Yeah, I would.
Libertarians would. And to be quite frank, they're right and they're wrong. They're right and they're wrong. You know, I think that allowing Japanese military aggression in, you know, out near Hawaii was dangerous. And Franklin Roosevelt, the bastard that he was probably trying to avoid war for a certain point. But then after a while, he decided to himself privately that we were going to have to go to war. And you probably support that, don't you, you warmongering son of a bitch?
Probably I do. even Franklin Roosevelt's right once a day.
God damn it.
There are some problems that you can't ignore. You get to a point where,
well,
you know.
Yeah, and that's really what it is that the argument for non-intervention is something that, like you say, it cannot be 100% perfectly consistently applied, because to say that is to say, oh, well, my neighbor next door is getting raped, you know, like, none of my business.
Not going to intervene.
Right. You know, Martin Luther King had a very famous quote. He said, you know, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. I think the anarchist argument, or even like the very, very hardcore isolationist argument on this, which does make some sense to me and does resonate with me, is the argument that it feels wrong to sort of draft my neighbor's resources, labor, and sometimes his life in order to fight what I may deem to be a good cause. In the sense, like, I think that people need, like the Amish, they need to be allowed to choose how their resources and their lives are spent. I certainly don't agree with a draft, but don't you have any sympathy for that argument whatsoever?
Yeah, I certainly do. At least as far as the draft goes, and the United States generally is pretty good. They won't conscript you and put you in a frontline unit. If you have a moral objection, they will give you a conscientious objector status. Maybe they put you in a rear echelon unit. Maybe they say, you know what, you don't have to serve. But we don't even draft people anymore, so it's not really an argument. To say, well, I
draft
like
their resources, we tax them.
Yeah, there's not a way around that. There's lots of things the government spends money on that I'm not real keen about. I can say
something that you benefit
my voice
from,
into the government.
Yeah.
But I kind of have to live with where I'm at.
Right, but for example, like, you know, I personally support the Jews of Israel and their struggle for independence and self-reliance, but I think that that's not being accomplished when the United States is intervening on their behalf. And I also think that it's wrong, because what happens is that there are people in the United States who don't support the state of Israel, who perhaps they sympathize with the plot of the Gazans because that's their family over there. And so I feel like it is morally wrong to take money from them, their tax dollars, and go and support the state of Israel, because it's supporting a cause. It may be taking money to build a bomb that's going to go and kill one of their family members. And isn't that immoral?
From that point of view, sure. But you have to remember, we dress our causes up sometimes to sell them as moral causes, but they're usually national interest things. The United States doesn't support Israel just because it loves or feels bad for Israel. We feel that as a nation, our government has come to the conclusion that it's in our national interest as Americans to have a friendly country in the region that sort of represents us in that area.
No two countries have always had their interests aligned. I mean, you're just saying that maybe overall?
Yeah. There's, you know, like I said about supporting Syngman Rhee. Syngman Rhee was a pretty bad guy. But it was in the U.S. best interest to have Syngman Rhee in South Korea rather than the North Koreans. The support for Israel, and I know especially among Republicans, we like to dress it up in all sorts of moral reasons. But it's a very practical reason, too.
Yeah, so. I guess the problem is just it lies in the philosophy for me, because, you know, the practical reason is always to protect the United States government, but it's not to necessarily protect the individual. And so I guess I place on a much higher level. I mean, I like the American government compared to other governments. I don't like the American government in general, but I like the idea that if government is to exist, its job is not to keep us safe. I think that its job is to keep us free. And if the government is acting to protect Israel because it's acting to protect its own best interests, that may not necessarily be maintaining American freedom. It may just be maintaining the American government's largesse. Can you understand that?
Yeah, I can see how you'd come to that conclusion. Don't necessarily agree, but yeah.
So, I think really what the argument here that you and I are having, though, Dominic, it comes down to the argument. Now, you said you believe in Jeffersonian liberty, but I mean, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Alexander Hamilton. And the types of debates that you and I are having are much more similar to the types of debates that Jefferson and Hamilton had. And libertarians sort of curse Hamilton. I think, you know, your buddy Tom DiLorenzo actually wrote a book, the Confederate guy, wrote a book about called Hamilton's Curse, and it was the idea about the American economy, where the Hamiltonians believed in mercantilism, and that it is the role of the American military to protect American trade, merchant trade, and that the shipping lanes around the world should be maintained and protected by the American military, because that's an economic benefit, not only to the United States, but to the world. Now, the Jeffersonians are a little bit more hardcore, and they think that these corporations should bear the brunt of passage, that they should pay the cost to keep these shipping lanes open, and that the American taxpayers, who may not necessarily benefit, what if they don't have gasoline? What if they're a hermit and they live in the woods and they don't use, use products that are being shipped from China and these places? Then their rights are being violated. So I guess would you ever say that perhaps there's an argument for the idea that maybe these corporations should stop, being on the dole and getting corporate welfare in the form of the military protection?
Not being on the dole, I would agree. But military protection, they do pay taxes as well. Mm-hmm. And while the fellow in his happening bunker that makes his own toilet paper may not need overseas trade, most of us benefit from it. Mm-hmm. I think you and I were both big supporters of free trade. Mm-hmm. To say that, well, the Navy shouldn't protect U.S. shipping, what's the cost of pirate interdiction of shipping? I would imagine it's pretty high. Most corporations may have a lot of money. I don't know if they could build their own aircraft carrier or even a fleet of destroyers. They're paying taxes as part of, you know, doing business here in the States. Mm-hmm. And they do benefit. It's nice to actually get a benefit from your tax dollars.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, I'm doing my best in order to maximize the potential and the profitability of the individual, because I think that is really what the aim is. And that the problem is that the United States government is looking at this from a, you know, again, ready, fire, aim perspective, you know, like, oh, let's try and get the maximum benefit for the maximum amount of people. When in reality, the focus should be on the protection of the rights of the individual so that we have the maximum individual liberty to make the choices that we want to make. So that if I want to buy something and support the state of Israel directly, I can do so. If I choose to boycott them, I can do so. And that's really what the argument should be. So, you know, I want to get this back to the original topic, because you read that the Ron Paul hit piece on me from the Ron Paul Institute, and they sort of, the Ron Paul Institute, you called him the Ron Paul Institute for Quislings and Collaborators.
I did indeed.
Yeah, so, and now you've coined it, and I'm stealing it. But where do you think this goes? You know, I mean, you've kind of got a view of the liberty movement in macro. You're embedded in it. You're trolling every single status every libertarian is posting. Who do you see as sort of like rising, like influential stars? What do you think are potential problems? Just as an outside observer, as someone who has some friends in the movement, but doesn't agree with everything. You know, Rand Paul's running for president. Ron Paul's still out there, sort of being like, you know, America sucks.
Zombie mode, yeah.
In zombie mode a bit. What's your advice? What do you see? Give me look at your neocon crystal ball. Tell me what do you see.
There's a lot of potential on the ground. Mm-hmm. You guys tend to be young and very motivated. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know between yourself, Tiffany Madison, and Marianne, how many hours a day goes into what you do. You guys are definitely dedicated young people. Mm-hmm. You suffer from some of what the Republican Party in general suffers from. Mm-hmm. Interesting candidates who don't have a ton of experience. And then the candidates that aren't very interesting, right. That for whatever reason are flawed. Mm-hmm. There's always been the libertarian strain in the conservative movement. Reagan always talked about it. Mm-hmm. Definitely coming out of the Western states, used to see a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Is there a potential for it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. As part of a broader political movement? Sure. Would it ever be a standalone kind of a movement? I don't really ever see that happening.
Why?
Well, it's very much still a third party niche kind of a thing when you try to stand it up by itself. Mm-hmm. You know, they got very excited when Gary Johnson got 0.9% of the vote.
The Libertarian Party people
are. That is not a move to make.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I worked on the Bob Barr campaign, and we got totally obliterated as well.
I can know what's this.
Oh, Lord. You know, I guess I can't give up hope, and maybe it's because I'm young, and I want to be optimistic that there can really be this new way. Because, again, just like the Republican Party emerged from the ashes of the Whig Party, you know, it was time for a new way. It was time for some radical new changes. And I think that maybe you even recognize some of these ideas, you know, some of these, the good ideas that we have. You know, there's a lot of bad ideas, but I think that, you know, that's natural. But if Rand Paul runs for president, would you support him?
If he won the primary, I'd definitely support him in a general. Mm-hmm. I'd have to see who he's running against in the primary. be frank, there's not a lot of really inspiring people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe.
Mm. All right. Well, see, now, wouldn't that be interesting and exciting to see, like, the old enemies, the neocons, the libertarians all get together and say, all right, we got to beat Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, you can't really say enemies. Yeah, sort of the guy who lives next door to you.
Feuding cousins, yeah. Sometimes his dog poops on your lawn.
Yeah. My dog is going nuts right now, as you can tell.
All right. Well, this was a really interesting interview. I think people are probably going to be disappointed that it wasn't full of more trolling and hate and, you know, crapping all over people. But I think that's because, you know, you and I are actually serious intellectuals, even though I'm a musical theater major and you're a roofer.
Not a roofer, see? I have all my teeth.
Yeah. we're just two patriots who care about our country and what happens. Dominic Yeti, thank you very much for joining the show, and have a great day.
Thank you.